Support for WPR comes from Tomorrow River Community Virtual School, delivering Waldorf-inspired live virtual lessons to grades 4K through 8th, open to all Wisconsin students. More is at trcvs.org.
Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
When Robin Wall Kimmerer was a little girl, her family spent summers canoe camping in the Adirondacks. Early mornings, when the sun was barely up, her father would make a pot of coffee on the Coleman stove, and each time, before he drank his first cup, he would stop, pour a thin stream of coffee on the ground, and say thanks to the spirits of the mountain. Robin is a member of the Potawatomi Nation. She grew up in a culture that considered the earth our mother, plants and animals our oldest teachers. Today, she's also an award-winning biologist and author of a book of essays called Braiding Sweetgrass. Robin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Anne. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. I really love that story about your father pouring the morning coffee on the ground. That was a regular ritual?
It was, absolutely, whenever we were out on the land, to start the day with Thanksgiving and, as you say, recognition of the gifts that are all around us. You don't take things for granted when you pause to say thank you.
And your story is typical of so many Native families' stories, you know, this break from the long tradition of culture. How did that happen in your own family?
Well, the break really began, well, there are so many historical steps to it, of course, but the one that is most poignant for me is that my grandfather, who was 9 years old on our Citizen Potawatomi Nation Reserve in Indian Territory, i.e. Oklahoma, was taken as a really young boy to east to the Carlisle Indian School. Whereas, you know, the mission of those boarding schools was total assimilation, to make people forget who they were, forget their ways of knowing, and replace them with those of the dominant culture. And so that was a really important break. And, you know, I remember as a kid asking my dad things about our culture, about our language, about ways of being. And he would just shake his head and say, you know, that was all left on the doorsteps of Carlisle Indian School. And so it has been a family practice and urge to reclaim and re-understand those ways of knowing.
How do you even go about doing that?
You know, because our history took us so far from our own people, some of my primary teachers of that kind of relationship were the plants themselves. I think I was born a botanist. You know, I just spent so much time in the woods looking at the way the world was put together and really adopted that notion that they could teach me many of the things that had been lost by history. So that was kind of my early immersion, I suppose. But then as I grew older and these great waves of cultural revitalization that are so powerful in Indian country today, we too became part of that wave of reclaiming and regenerating those things that had been lost.
You recently set out to learn the Potawatomi language yourself. How hard is that?
I found it an immense challenge, but also a great joy. And again, throughout Indian country, there is a wonderful language revitalization movement happening, so that even I, living remotely from my nation in upstate New York, I can sign on to, you know, an online language class from Oklahoma and study language in that way. There are immersion camps and all kinds of online resources, as well as the in-person connections that happen in community and at our tribal gatherings and classes.
Now, have you seen that closeness to the land, that different attitude toward nature, reflected in the Potawatomi language as you've begun to learn it? Are there words, for instance, that don't translate, that we don't have in English?
Absolutely. And these words capture the worldview that we have been talking about of the personhood of other beings. One of the words that really captivated me for the longest time was a word, papoi. And I happened on that word in a book by an Anishinaabe ethnobotanist, Kiweda Nokwe. And she talked about this wonderful word, and you know what it means. It means the force which causes mushrooms to push up out of the earth overnight.
Oh, the fact that's beautiful.
isn't it? When I learned that word, it reignited for me the longing for that lost language. If there was a people, if there was a thought system that contained a word for the life force of mushrooms, I wanted to learn it. And one of the things that has made my very rudimentary attempts at learning Potawatomi both beautiful and really challenging is the grammar. It contains what I would call the grammar of animacy.
Wow. Because what is that?
It's, you know, one of the best ways perhaps to say what it is to say at first what our native language, English, is not. You know how in English we refer to each other as persons, but if we referred to that maple tree outside our windows, we would have to refer to it in English as it. Mm-hmm. In English, you're either a human or you're an object. But in Potawatomi, this grammar of animacy means that we have the linguistic structure to speak of the living world as if it were alive, as if it was a person, as if it were our family, because in our way of thinking, it is. And isn't that, it's so interesting that in English, that has supported this, let's be honest, in many cases, a pretty exploitative way of thinking about the earth as if it was just stuff, as if it was just a commodity. Well, that's what our language lets us do. It only lets us speak of water as if it was an it, not as if it was a who.
Does that mean, I don't know, if you're talking about the lake or the forest, that you refer to it as he or she, or is it something more than that?
Well, it's not necessarily gendered. You know, our the Romance languages do have these cases for gendering. We'll say he or she. But in Potawatomi ways of speaking and thinking of the world, there's something for which there is no equivalent, really, in English. And that is the animate being who is not a human. And one of the things that really differentiates them, particularly in this idea that a worldview is embedded in the language, is that English is, I forget the percentages, but it's in the neighborhood of 60 to 70% of the words in English are nouns. Whereas that fraction is reversed in Potawatomi and Ojibwe, that they're verbs.
More of the language is verbs?
Is verbs, huh. Exactly. So, and this, so it conveys a world in motion, a world of animacy. Again, the things that we would say in English are a noun, like a stream. That's a noun, right? Well, no, it's a verb in Potawatomi, to be a stream. Because the water is alive, it conveys that notion that the world is alive and dynamic and always changing. And so a stream is not a static thing, it's a way of being. And so this struggle in converting your whole lens of looking at language from a noun-based to a verb-based language really captures that worldview of an animate universe.
What a beautiful notion. Oh, that's just gorgeous. That's something I'm taking away with me today. Thank you. So I'm curious, we alluded early, of course, to I think we all feel so much fear these days about the state of the planet, the future of the environment. Scientists tell us we've reached the point where we've done too much damage to retreat from. Where do you find hope?
I find hope in actually looking at many of those damaged places, which in fact show incredible resilience. Life wants to continue. And when we look at all the damage we've inflicted, it's easy to think that the earth has been broken, that the land is broken. But it's our relationship with land that's broken, and we have the power to change that. We can choose to consume with honor from the earth. We can choose to consume less. We can choose to understand the world as gift and respond accordingly. There are so many messages out there that make us feel like we're powerless, but each of us can choose the pathway of honorable consumption, of living with gratitude and reciprocity, and thereby create a transformative movement. I think that's what we need. Not more policy, not more data, not more money, but a change of heart.
Robin, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Anne. My pleasure.
Robin Wall Kimmerer is professor of environmental and forest biology at the State University of New York. Her collection of essays is called Braiding Sweetgrass.